Hello, friends. This is Fred Dominguez. Before we continue our study of 12 extraordinary women this morning, I'd like to wish a very special happy birthday to our daughter-in-law, Arlie Dominguez, who lives in Abilene, Texas, and is married to our youngest son, Sam. Happy birthday, Arlie. We love you, and you also are an extraordinary woman. In the ancient world, a woman's status was often dependent on things beyond her control. If she were born into a poor family, there was very little likelihood that she would ever advance in social class. Until she was of marriageable age, she was wholly dependent upon her father and his provision for her. If her father died before she married, then she was dependent upon the firstborn son for her care. Even if a woman was well cared for in her household and married well, her status in the community rested upon something over which she had no control. Her status as a woman, even among other women, was dependent upon her ability to bear children. A woman who was unable to bear children for her husband was essentially looked down upon in society. The best of her neighbors and friends pitied her because of this situation. The worst among them tormented her because of it. Most people in the ancient world saw the bearing of children as a sign of God's blessings resting upon them. On at least one occasion in the Old Testament, we know that God actually withheld the ability to conceive because his disfavor was upon a kingdom. So this idea was not too far-fetched. Nevertheless, the inability to conceive was not always due to sinful conduct. This was certainly the case with Abraham's wife Sarah, and is also true of the woman who is the next in line in our series on 12 Extraordinary Women. Our subject this morning is Hannah, whose story is found in the first two chapters of 1 Samuel. Hannah's predicament is revealed to us in 1 Samuel chapter 1, verses 1 through 6. The setting for these events is at the very end of the period of the Judges, perhaps about 1,000 years before the birth of Christ. The tabernacle of God was still in Shiloh, and Eli and his sons were the priests there. Hannah's husband was a man named Elkanah, and they lived in Ramathaim Zophim, in the hill country of Ephraim. This city is also called Ramah in Scripture. Now, commentators suggest that although Elkanah was called an Ephraimite in chapter 1 and verse 1, that he was very likely a Levite living in a city that had been designated for the Levites within the territory of Ephraim. In 1 Chronicles 6, verses 20 and 21, it identifies Elkanah as a descendant of Kohath, whose family had the responsibility for caring for the items within the most holy place in the tabernacle. In 1 Samuel chapter 1, verses 1 to 6, we learn that Hannah was one of two wives to Elkanah. The second wife's name was Peninnah. Polygamy, of course, was widely practiced in the ancient world, although it was never sanctioned by God. In Matthew chapter 19, verses 1 through 6, Jesus referred back to Adam and Eve in the beginning as the model for marriage, that is, one man and one woman for life. The Old Testament character Lamech, one of the descendants of Cain, is the first man in Scripture to have had more than one wife, Genesis chapter 4 and verse 19. Even a cursory review of the Scriptures demonstrates that polygamy is not the best formula for marital bliss, and Elkanah's situation certainly illustrates this fact. Two things are immediately evident that demonstrate that polygamy is not good. The first is that there was rivalry between Elkanah's two wives. Verse 2 tells us that Peninnah bore children to Elkanah, but Hannah did not. Now, in a culture in which bearing children was a mark of societal status, this gave Peninnah an opportunity to provoke Hannah. The fact that verse 6 identifies Peninnah as Hannah's rival suggests that there was an air of competition between them for Elkanah's affections. This was the case as far back as Rachel and Leah, who, although they were sisters, became bitter rivals over the bearing of children. That's in Genesis chapter 30. Thus, Hannah suffered because of the constant provocations of Peninnah. The second thing that we see in this story is that there will always be favoritism in a polygamous relationship. This was true in the case of Jacob and his wives. He loved Rachel more than he loved Leah, and this favoritism stoked the flames of competition between the two sisters. So also with Elkanah. He favored Hannah, even though she could not bear him any children. In verses 3 through 5, we see that when Elkanah divided up the portions to give to his wives after the yearly sacrifice, he always gave Hannah a double portion. We tend to look at this display of a favoritism as an act of sympathy toward Hannah because she was childless. And even if this were true, it negatively affected his relationship with Peninnah and her relationship with Hannah. So we see what Hannah's predicament was. She was unable to conceive children in a time when this was socially important. She had a husband who loved her nonetheless, but she was constantly persecuted by a rival whose ability to bear children made her Hannah's superior in the eyes of the community. It is at this point that we begin to see what made Hannah an extraordinary woman. In 1 Samuel chapter 1, verses 7 through 18, the scriptures reveal to us how Hannah resolved her problem. She resolved her problem by turning to the Lord for help. Year after year, Elkanah took his family to Shiloh in order to worship God. On one of these occasions, Hannah sought the Lord in earnest prayer about her circumstance. This is recorded in 1 Samuel chapter 1, verses 9 through 11. In this place, the scripture says, "Then Hannah rose after eating and drinking in Shiloh. Now Eli the priest was sitting on the seat by the doorpost of the temple of the Lord. She, greatly distressed, prayed to the Lord and wept bitterly. She made a vow and said, 'O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your maidservant and remember her, and not forget your maidservant, but will give your maidservant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and a razor shall never come on his head.'" Now this sets Hannah apart from some notable women in the pages of Scripture. Both Rachel and Leah sought resolution to their competition by providing their handmaids to their husband. Sarah tried the same thing by giving Hagar to Abraham. Hannah, on the other hand, went to God in prayer. This was no ordinary prayer, though. The scripture says she was greatly distressed and that she wept bitterly as she prayed to the Lord. And we notice also that Hannah's prayer was very specific. She had in mind exactly what would bring peace to her situation, and she laid all of this before her God. Her prayer contained two elements. The first element was what she wanted. Hannah wanted a son. Giving birth to a son, especially as a woman's first child, was very important in this time. Hannah asked God to bless her in the best possible way. In this way, Hannah illustrates an important principle about our own prayers. They should be specific. We should express to the very best of our ability exactly what is on our heart. This is not because God does not know what we need, but rather that He wishes us to express these needs to Him. The second element in Hannah's prayer was her vow to God. Now we need to be clear that Hannah was not bargaining with God or bartering with Him. She was declaring to the Lord the fervency of her petition. She wanted a son so badly that she was willing to promise God that she would sacrifice that son to God's service. Now, vows to God were serious business and were not to be entered into rashly. According to the law of Moses, if Elkanah did not negate Hannah's vow, she would have to keep it or face serious consequences. So all of these things together show us the character of this exceptional woman. She was a godly woman, certainly more godly than a rival. She was sincere in her faith and in her trust in God. And she was willing to sacrifice the source of her worldly happiness as her way of expressing her gratitude for God's answer to her fervent request. In this respect, Hannah stands as an example to be followed still today. The fervency of Hannah's prayer and the deep despair from which it arose prompted Eli the priest to suspect that she was drunk. When she told Eli of the reason for her prayer and of her intense desire for God's blessing, he sent her away with his blessing. This, of course, is only part of the story. In verses 19 through 20, the Lord gave his answer to Hannah's prayer. The scripture says, "Then they arose early in the morning and worshiped before the Lord and returned to their house in Ramah. And Elkanah had relations with Hannah his wife, and the Lord remembered her. It came about in due time after Hannah had conceived that she gave birth to a son, and she named him Samuel, saying, "Because I have asked him of the Lord." It appears from the text that the Lord answered Hannah's prayer almost immediately. Once Elkanah and his family returned to Ramah, Hannah very soon thereafter conceived, and Samuel was born within a year of their return. We can only imagine the joy that this brought to Hannah. With the birth of a son, she would no longer be the object of her rival's disdain. She had fulfilled her responsibility as a wife, even if she never had another child. She was at the very pinnacle of happiness. But even this was not the end of her story. Hannah had promised God that she would dedicate her son to God's service. In verses 21 to 25, Hannah revealed her vow to Elkanah. To his credit, Elkanah endorsed Hannah's vow and allowed her to remain in Ramah with the child until he was weaned. We see here Hannah's faithfulness. In verses 24 to 28, the scripture reveals that she kept her vow to God and brought Samuel to Shiloh and gave him to Eli to be trained in the Lord's service. Samuel at that time was likely no more than 3 or 4 years of age, and as much as we might imagine leaving him would hurt her, Hannah was faithful to her promise. In 1 Samuel chapter 2, verses 18 through 21, we find God's response to Hannah's faithfulness. The scripture says, "Now Samuel was ministering before the Lord as a boy, wearing a linen ephod. And his mother would make him a little robe and bring it to him from year to year when she would come up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice. Then Eli would bless Elkanah and his wife and say, 'May the Lord give you children from the woman in place of the one she dedicated to the Lord.' And they went to their own home. The Lord visited Hannah, and she conceived and gave birth to 3 sons and 2 daughters, and the boy Samuel grew before the Lord." It is important to remember that Hannah only asked God for 1 son. She promised to give that son back to God, and she never asked him for anything more. Nevertheless, because she kept her vow, God blessed her in excess of her wildest dreams. He gave her 5 more children, 3 boys and 2 girls, to take the place of Samuel. This reminds us of the pledge God made in Malachi 3 and verse 10 when he told Israel to bring the whole tithe into the storehouse and that he would open the windows of heaven and pour out an overflowing blessing. Hannah was rewarded for her faithfulness with an overwhelming blessing from God. If we follow her example of faithfulness today, then we too will receive God's overwhelming blessings. Well, Hannah loved God and she trusted in him. She sought the resolution of her problem only through him. She never wavered in her faith and she never failed to be faithful to him in every respect. Her love and her devotion make her an extraordinary woman, an inspiration to believers 3,000 years later, and an example of godliness to be emulated still today. Hannah was indeed an extraordinary woman, an example for all of us today. God bless women who are faithful like Hannah. Thanks very much for listening this morning. Please join us again next time for Let the Bible Speak.